This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 15th of July, 2021. And just at the top of the program, want to remind folks, if you haven't seen my tweets or our tweets out on Saxo Market Call, I have a webinar up today, FX Update webinar, the monthly effort to take a look through the FX market and see what's going on. In some cases, not so much going on, but I think there are some very interesting themes and the market is testing some interesting areas in some cases, especially for the US dollar. And as we especially look forward to August, the August timeframe for a potential pivot. And you can see the details on slide two. You can sign up. It is later today at 1300 European time CET, 11 o'clock GMT. Many of you will be listening to this podcast after then. Just be aware that if you'd like to see a recording of the webinar, it will be available on that webinars.saxo link approximately 24 hours after I record it. So have a look there. I think those especially FX oriented will hopefully find some interesting charts and inspiration for what's going on in this market. And let's get down to that. Let's look at the broader US equity market session yesterday. We saw a pretty tepid session to say the least. The NASDAQ 100 a little bit disappointingly failing to get a bit more of a boost out of the drop in the longer term US Treasury yields. And as we've been emphasizing so much lately, you can see all the red on slide three in our various baskets there for the one-day performance and even for the month-to-date performance. It just shows you the breadth is really lousy here, continues to be lousy. I put up the Russell 2000 chart today on slide three just to give you a sense of how weak the median stock has been lately, as you can see there. Last two sessions have been quite weak, and actually the Russell 2000 itself has been pretty much going nowhere since, let's call it the March timeframe. So again, a cause for some concern for the risk of a consolidation of some decent magnitude when you have such a thin participation in the rally. It's really those big mega caps, the Amazons and $2 trillion companies of the world that are been keeping this market up in terms of the headline averages and their market cap weightings. Let's see, the most important event yesterday, well, we had a bit of, just to get it out of the way, some Chinese data overnight. Saw the Chinese market fairly well supported. Retail sales was probably the best of the numbers, beating expectations. GDP slightly beating on the sequential quarter on quarter, although a hair lower on the year on year at 7.9% versus 8% expected. 1.3% was the sequential number, as the country is aiming for a 6% growth target this year. Australian employment data was interesting as well, quite strong. The I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the full-time employment level was far greater than the headline employment growth, which is something like 29K, beat expectations, but more than 100% of that was full-time position growth, which is the kind that the RBA would like to see. And we saw the unemployment rate drop to 4.9%, and some of that is hidden by various job support programs, et cetera. But that unemployment rate is actually below the lows of the pre-pandemic sort of lows. There were a couple of prints that were near that level, but not quite that low back in 2018 and 19. So, this divergence I mentioned yesterday between what the RBA is saying, what the RBNZ is doing, or saying and doing in both cases is quite remarkable. And I wonder where there's a lot of tension there. And I think the RBA is going to have to capitulate at some point relative to the RBNZ. So either the RBNZ is too optimistic and this overheating will fade in New Zealand, or the RBA is behind the curve here. An interesting, I think, tension for the next, let's call it 12 months. But let's get back to the other interesting thing that's been going on. And that is the Fed Chair Powell testimony yesterday. The coverage of that generally sees, the headline that Powell is sort of having to stick to his guns on his position or the Fed's position on inflation, and it will prove transitory. Some pretty intense questioning on that front. And then the interesting bit on, and that's no surprise, and then the interesting bit on the employment or the labor market, which is the key, I think, for the Fed's position here, more than its view or just as much as its view on inflation. And some interesting language around that. So there seems to be this you know, the Fed is somewhat confused by the incredible demand for labor and then the lack of supply, despite, you know, clear indications that there are millions of people that are not currently employed. So that mismatch and the discussion around that was probably the most interesting thing yesterday. And even his forecast, and this is really key, I think, for how willing the Fed is to sit to this incredibly hot inflation numbers, that even if, they'll be watching, Powell said, as these extended unemployment benefits roll off in coming months to see what the effect is on labor supply to sort of address some of these labor shortages you're seeing in the U.S. economy. And he said, even then, he doesn't expect the supply to be able to see the jobs market reaching maximum employment. So just a pretty remarkable performance all in all. And so you see that to a degree in the market reaction. The dollar was a bit softer. It was in places anyway, against the yen, against the euro. And then if you look at the short-term interest rate futures, quite remarkable. This market is just not willing to take a position on inflation, whether it's transitory now or not. It's continuing to, I think, more than saying, well, it agrees that it's transitory, just not wanting to take a position. So if you see on slide 4, you can see that December 22 Eurodollar short-term interest rate future that I often use as sort of our benchmark here, more or less erasing about 75% plus of the reaction to the June CPI print that was so hot. And then on the right, the 10-year future also rallying quite strongly. And we're not that many basis points now back from the lows of the cycle in longer-term yields. Just an incredible statement on, the market's anticipation of the dangers of inflation and the scale of potential the growth outlook from here. Now, one market that I think is doing quite well and makes some sense, because you're seeing U.S. real yields, given those high CPI levels and given the lack of response in the nominal yield market, you're seeing real yields in the U.S. quite strongly lower. And that's the stuff that you need to see for the gold market. And I've got slide 5 showing gold prices. It's really difficult, technically, this area here. Put a few arrows in the chart. So that first arrow on the far left, back from August of last year, when gold peaked out well north of $2,000 an ounce, is around the time that this sort of run lower in U.S. Real yields was ending. It's not exactly timed with that, but that's around the time you're seeing the transition. And then the second arrow, when gold bottomed out below $1,700, was right at the day, very day almost, that U.S. nominal yields topped out. There was also a considerable bump higher in U.S. real yields in Q1 of this year. And then that final arrow is the day of the FOMC meeting, this apparent shock that the Fed could ever indicate that it ever is willing to tighten or launch a tightening cycle. So we've retraced a lot of that, and about $20 more needed to sort of erase that post-FOMC, June FOMC reaction. So that would be the first hurdle for gold bulls. But you can see that we haven't really achieved a rally through a major pivot level for quite some time here. And so arguably, we need to get back up into that $1,900 range to really neutralize this slide since the FOMC meeting and the consolidation before that. And it's just a tough wait for gold bulls here. And in the meantime, we've broken above the 200-day moving average, but I think that's less interesting. But the fundamental backdrop, somewhat supportive here for the gold rally, if this, of course, extends. And yesterday we had a Bank of Canada meeting. The Bank of Canada, and I've got this some slides or some charts on slide 6 discussing that, where we see the Bank of Canada tapering purchases another billion Canadian dollars per week. This was largely expected. So the former rate was 3 billion Canadian per week, reduced to 2 billion. But in the outlook in the statement, there's a little bit of cautious language positioned around the current coronavirus variants, et cetera. And this sense that they don't see the sort of the output gap being unwound in the economy until the second half of last year. So that's sort of maintaining the expectations of the second half of next year being the earliest horizon for a hike in actual interest rates. Market was gunning for a bit more. As well, you have an oil market correction, which has been pretty deep, and that has taken a bite out of the Canadian dollar as well. So a couple of things I want to take you through on slide 6, and that is That is, of course, the two-year rates. That's on the left, the sort of the candlestick chart there, coming off a few basis points. Not a major move, but yes, it just shows that the Canadian central bank was not as hawkish as expected. And then you see the two-year dollar U.S. versus Canadian interest rates, and it would have suggested we should have seen a much more significant slide, coming into, let's call it, this week, than we have seen. And it just shows you how important the fact that the Fed turned around turned around interest rate expectations quite forcefully in that mid-June FOMC meeting. So you see Dollar Canada on the right and that big rally off the bottom, the 120 to 121 sort of consolidation area on the bottom is that June FOMC meeting. And even though U.S. yields ripped higher, and you can see that reflected in Canadian yields also ripping higher on the left chart, they actually ripped higher more aggressively than did U.S. rates, and yet Dollar Canada rose. So it's clearly not just the rate picture. The Fed is really going to have to take it easy, or the market is going to have to say, well, look, it may be the Fed that has changed directions, but we're going to see them lagging far behind other central banks in providing any tightening of policy. Regardless, technical basis here, 126 to 126, maybe 50, but arguably 30, if you look at the 200-day moving average coming into view there around 126.30, is the key resistance here. And then the big question is the dollar peaking out here, or does it have another leg higher as we need to price in Fed tapering, et cetera, further out in the fall? I'll address some of those questions at the in the FX webinar. But a pretty key resistance area of something like Dollar Canada, just as we've argued, the euro dollar support I'll mention in a moment, and that Aussie dollar support around 74, etc. The yen enjoying very much the drop in the longer term U.S. yields. So you can see the chart on slide 7. Again, the critical area around down around 109 to 109.10. You've got these so-called Ichimoku levels coming in, the cloud, the lagging line would start to break through the price if we're punching down through there. There's a Fibonacci retracement, etc. So it's all lining up for that really key focus is around the 109 area. And I would suggest we would probably need to see both yields lower and risk off to get this Japanese to Japanese yen to continue to rally. We have a Bank of Japan meeting tonight, but not expecting any anything from that meeting that really shakes the market. I think it is these other cross-market, intermarket indicators that are more important for the Japanese yen. And then the overall look at the FX market on slide 8, we did see the euro dollar bouncing off that key sort of neckline area that I've been banging on about for some days now, just below 118. You can see on the chart on the left, but hardly anything inspiring for the bulls yet. We really need to get a sharp rally through at least 119 to start to pull away from this support and downside pivot area. And you see the size of that slide on the FOMC meeting from mid-June. You really need to poke well above 120 if you're looking at, and look at how Eurodollar is doing. It's the same chart essentially for the last couple months as gold, except gold has managed to rally here locally much more sharply, while the euro has hardly managed to pick itself up off the mat at all. So, concerns as well, as we've talked about it, and next week's ECB meeting is going to bring the forecast of extended some sort of QE extension beyond the end of the emergency purchase program that is set to unwind in March of next year. And then note on the trend readings, the Norwegian krone are really getting the worst of it. I'm going to talk about that in my FX webinar. I don't want to spoil too much of it there. Quite interesting. I think we're getting into some value territory for NOK, unless we're about to see a global economic collapse and much, much lower oil prices. The Canadian dollar also one of the lower readings, as well as the Swedish krona. And you see gold picking up there with the strongest positive reading, almost matched or basically matched by the Japanese yen. And I think there's similar drivers there at the moment anyway. And then on the earnings front, we saw Wells Fargo yesterday, actually the first really big bank to see a positive market reaction to its results. However, it is also noting, and those results, approved results, are basically on operational improvements. It sounds like they're doing some downsizing, some trimming of staff, et cetera. So really good metrics across the board relative to expectations. But they are also noting this decline in lending that the other banks have also noted. We have further banks out reporting today, Morgan Stanley and U.S. Bancorp. Of course, Morgan Stanley could report something quite strong on the M&A and banking activity, investment banking activity front that could offset some of that. But that's been the theme. And then I think interesting on Friday, you see that Charles Schwab report, and that's going to be more about trading volumes. And on that front, I think there's a risk there of disappointment. But let's see, talk more about that tomorrow. I've put up a chart of United Health, which is also reporting today. You can see that it's reached a major resistance line, those all-time highs from earlier this year. Just a remarkable company, a massive company, $400 billion in market cap almost. Barely missed a beat even during the worst pandemic month. Still managed to grow year on year for that month by a couple of percent. So it's hard to hold companies like that back almost regardless of the environment. And then our macro calendar highlights, you can see on slide 10, we have Fed Chair Powell out today once again before a Senate panel this time instead of the House panel. I'm not expecting any sort of new message. Obviously, we've heard ad nauseum from Powell lately. So, but of course, some kind of key gotcha moment in a Q&A could be interesting. We have the Bank of Japan tonight. I did not put it on the left, but it is on the right for the key. Of course, Friday's session will be overnight for Japan. And there's no time given on the time of their release. But the interesting thing there is looking for this their own efforts. It's something like what the ECB is looking at, and that is this green lending business, where they may be looking at actually paying companies 0.1% interest to borrow for green programs. So again, this climate agenda really just continues to march ever higher in prominence. And we actually had the EU releasing yesterday a long document, the so-called Fit for 55 framework that they're looking at. It's not anything that's passed as a plan. It's an initiative, but it's this idea that they can reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 55% relative to 1990 levels by 2030. Includes these things that we've come up and discussed before, like the carbon border tax, which has massive implications if it's implemented. These are long-term things, of course. And also the phasing out of petrol burning vehicles, et cetera. We need to watch how these things are marching forward and whether they're getting passed, because they do have, again, very big consequences for both inflation, trade, and all kinds of other factors. there is quite a patch of U.S. data points up today. The first regional manufacturing surveys, that weekly jobless claims number, Fed Chair Powell out again, once again, a Fed voter out speaking, and interesting, tonight we have the New Zealand Q2 CPI, which is expected at 2.7% year on year. That would be the highest reading since something like 2012. So one of the reasons that the RBNZ has decided to just step away from all of the QE as of next week, which was what inspired its sharp rally earlier this week. And then closing out this week on the US front is the retail sales. Again, as I noted, interesting to see from next month whether we get some stabilization in some of the retail sales number and even renewed growth on the child tax credit payments, which are going out as checks rather than as mere deductions, as mentioned yesterday, rather than as mere deductions when people file taxes next April. And then I've put up on the longer term outlook the ECB and FOMC meetings, and that Fed Jackson Hole conference, which could be quite interesting for whether the Fed is having to mull an overhaul of its attitude on tapering, et cetera. That was a pretty quick rundown of the market. A couple things I'm just noting on my notes for this today. Actually, one in the crypto space, one interesting thing was Powell being queried not only on the central bank digital currency idea, but also on the Bitcoin market, et cetera. And he mentioned actually that stable coins might need to be regulated more closely because there's some issues around those if they're to become a more significant, playing a more significant role in the U.S. Payment system. And then we have oil, which corrected, I think I did mention it earlier, oil corrected quite strongly yesterday, in part on U.S. gasoline inventories actually building rather than seeing a draw on the week. I think about 3 million difference in reality versus expectations there. And as well, I saw some note about the UAE potentially moving towards some kind of deal on getting a better allotment for itself in the OPEC plus production schedule. It's felt it's been somewhat unfairly treated because of because of the how the allotments were created at the beginning of these OPEC cuts. Okay, that's it for today. I'm hoping to have Stain Jakobsen, our chief investment officer, back on the call tomorrow. So stay tuned for that regardless. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.